Welcome, everyone, to our bright and early panel session. Who here went to... Hey, he's made it. Who here made it to any of the Apache Way talks yesterday? I know at least Lars did because he gave it. So the idea of today's session is to talk through with some people who've been involved in the foundation for a while about why some of the bits of the Apache Way exist, why we've had to make certain policy decisions, where things have worked, where things haven't worked, and try and give you guys a bit more of an understanding about the why behind the what that you have to do. So, to kick off, and while I figure out how to get this microphone on my T-shirt, can we do some introductions, please, everyone?
My name is Bertrand de la Creta. I'm from Switzerland. I've been involved in the foundation since the early 2000s, initially with the Apache Cocoon project, which was still is a system to process XML with pipelines. We don't do that much XML today, so it's less popular, but it still exists. And I've been on the board of directors a few times. I'm currently sitting on it.
Hello, my name is Lars Albrecht. I've been involved with the Apache web server for about 20 years now. So I'm one of the co-founders of the ASF. I happened to be around at that time, so I've seen the Apache Way from its origin, more or less, 20 years ago with the web server, until today. That's me.
So my name is Dirk van Gulik. I've also been involved with Apache from day one. I was the president of the Apache Software Foundation for the first 10 years as we went through things, and have sort of like after the web server interfered a little bit with the XML and the early days of Java.
Hey, my name is Roman. So I've been involved in Apache ever since Yahoo donated Hadoop. So I was on the original team at Yahoo. So I guess, you know, that was kind of the beginning of the big data in Apache, which is now how many percent?
Yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday there was a slide and I'm like, man, we do a lot of it. So I also get involved in the Apache incubator. So I guess, you know, that's sort of my other passion, trying to bring new projects into the foundation. And that's actually where most of the fun begins, because, you know, you get to talk to people who are not necessarily familiar with the Apache Way. And through those conversations, a lot of times, you know, they educate you more than you educate them, because you all of a sudden will like, well, why are we doing it this way? Maybe we shouldn't be. So that's me.
Okay. So I asked around yesterday for what some people grumbled about. And the first one that came up was appropriate enough for the weather. Why do we hate umbrellas? Is it always sunny where you live? Okay, who wants to tell us a little bit about what happened when we used to have umbrellas?
I can maybe get going with Hadoop, but I'm sure there is one like Uber umbrella that I'm sure Bertrand has. Oh, right. Yeah. So if you look into the history of the foundation, I mean, of course, the foundation began with the web server, right? You know, back then it was Apache, right? You know, it was a foundation to support, you know, that thing that gave you the internet, well, at least in the usable form. But once new projects were added to the foundation, you know, the question became like how to govern them. And one idea to govern them is to have, you know, sort of this umbrella project, right? You know, almost like a line of development, right? You know, let's say like an umbrella, you know, everything Java, right? You know, that would be like a project, and then everything else would be a top, you know, sub-project under that big umbrella. It's actually exactly what happened with Hadoop. So Hadoop, you know, was this big sort of processing framework, and then everything else that is now, you know, a separate project used to be a sub-project of Hadoop. Now, I think, you know, the biggest sort of issue with that for me is that I like, you know, communities to be as self-governing as possible, because that's sort of, to me, the healthy status of the community. And essentially, if you have a community that is subdivided, right, that, you know, has these subsets that never talk to each other, you really should be running those subsets as separate projects and not as an umbrella, because there's really nothing that you gain from the umbrellifying them. I mean, at the top level, you've got board of directors of ASF anyway, and, you know, there's no reason to have, like, this intermediate, you know, layer of stuff. So that's why I don't like umbrellas.
Right. So I think, so like, I think it may also be sort of like useful to sort of like lift the helicopter a bit. So the ASF in many ways is I mean, we always like talk about code and about community and things like that. But the foundation itself, sort of like a legal entity, is actually in many ways a container, a sort of like a safe legal space in which developers can develop code, can release code under the Apache license without the risk of being individually sued. And in the US, that's not entirely any theoretical thing. In the rest of the world, there's also all sorts of liability things. So even though as an engineer you can say like, oh, well, here's a piece of code under this license, and the license says like, if it breaks, you get the piece of keep the pieces, you can't sue me. That doesn't mean that actually company can't try to sue you. And of course, if that happens to you individually, that's a fairly painful thing. So in Apache, a lot of things are about basically making sure that it's the Apache Software Foundation which does the release of the software. So that's the moment when you do a distribution, when you make a release, that's sort of like when your legal liabilities start to accrue, when you sort of like become responsible for things. And with a lot of so-called like oversight, we make sure that as a community, we go through a very controlled process when that release happens, when the distribution happens. So that's why all the votes are there. That's why we sort of like are quite careful. That's why we sort of like have teams report to the board to sort of like make sure there's sort of like sufficient oversight to always be able to say like, this release wasn't made by Fred or Mary, but this is a release of the Apache Software Foundation. And I think our big struggle with, so that actually all reeks of control, of governance, of sort of like a hierarchy. And I guess our big issue with umbrellas, on the one hand, it's really easy to put something deep under an umbrella. So you already got a well-functioning process, let's say in Jakarta, in Hadoop or whatever else, and you want to do something extra. So you sort of like put it somewhere in there because you've got all these working processes, all this governance. But at the same time, because you're doing something deeper there, it also means that you're now sort of like, you've just made a little hierarchy of control. You sort of like you're inviting more scrutiny. You sort of like, you're basically creating an organization. Which means that all of a sudden the board at the top sort of like has to keep a more careful eye on Hadoop, because it has to sort of like trust that Hadoop sort of like keeps a more careful eye on that sub-project, which keeps a more careful eye on that sub-project below it. And in many ways, sort of like as programmers, sort of like we act, I think, sort of like if I talk to myself, I like to sort of like see those things flattened, made completely flat, because that sort of like means that every community is responsible for their own releases, for their own distribution, no matter how complex that is or how easy that is. And they can all report to the board, like, yes, we did the release, we sort of like did all the plus ones, it's all hunky dory. And sort of like then, in many ways, the legal side of the foundation is sort of like very simple, very transparent, no room for errors, no room for worries. And if there's little room for those things, that means basically there is no need for much trust. So that means that the board can sort of like be happy that when a certain PMC runs well, that they can sort of like have the old board report, but certainly not sort of like a board report every month. So I think that the other aspect of apart from letting the community govern themselves, I think it's also about keeping the ASF free of a lot of like hierarchy and control change, where everyone has to check everyone, has to check everyone, and sort of like have that spiraling out of control.
Yeah, I think the problem, I think the Jakarta project was, I think, the original example of where we had, in some cases, projects, yes, there were Java technologies, but they were kind of separate and unrelated from each other. However, there were a sub-project under Jakarta. I think that was the first one where at some point people realized this just doesn't make sense. We need to flatten that hierarchy. Jakarta today is actually no longer existing. It's part of the Apache Attic project. So I think in general, I agree with what you said, Dirk, that we need to flatten the hierarchy. I guess there are some cases where if you have a little extra tool from which you want to do a release, which is kind of related to your main project anyway, I think at some point there's a boundary where you need to decide, okay, now this community is growing on its own. It's too big, or it's a separate, or it's drifting into a separate direction. Then it makes sense to flatten the hierarchy. For some smaller projects, maybe that's okay, but yeah.
So I think one discriminator I often use in those cases is sort of like, okay, well, if you have a situation, so the last thing Apache would want is a release to go out of the door as a proper distribution, where we know there is actually a very big security hole in it or something else, because then we're sort of like almost sort of like intentionally or legally settled, willfully sort of like putting people at risk. So one of the really useful discriminators is sort of like, can you get in a situation where as a group you release a piece of like something deep under your umbrella, which is kind of like wrong, and you know it's wrong, but you're pushing it out anyway because your bigger thing is more important. So sort of like, do you sort of like see there is a conflict between the release path of your two pieces of software? And as soon as you sort of like see there is a risk of that releasing, that's probably an indication that you need to sort of like split up your community or split the two things up. On the other hand, if it's like something which is always shipped with your main product and actually the risk of that type of conflict is almost zero, then I think actually it sort of like pretty sort of like falls the other way in my opinion.
I'll just say that I think there's a right size for Apache projects. I think the Apache model works best when you have, I would say, 10 to 15 PMC members in a project. Can be a bit more, but I think the model doesn't work well when you have three PMC members in a project. If two of them fight, it's really hard to bring it back to order. You know, if you have 10 people and one of them is crazy for some time, the nine others, there's a good chance that they will make them people come to their senses. So we do have at least one umbrella, which is Apache Commons. You know, lots of small Java libraries, and I think there the umbrella model works because it's the same types of sub projects. They're all small Java libraries, so that works. But in general, I agree with what you guys have said.
Okay, another thing that some new incubator podlings were whinging about was that they were forced to bring everything back to the list, and they were saying, well, you know, if we all just sit around in our conference room in California, we can get this stuff hammered out much more quickly. Why do you keep telling us that that's a bad thing? Why do we have to keep bringing it back to the list?
I think it's about that oversight again. It's not just that, if everyone from the project is in a single room and talks about stuff, that's perfectly fine. You can communicate in various ways. But as I mentioned also in my talk yesterday, the phrase that gets mentioned often is, if it didn't happen on the mailing list, it didn't happen. It's not just about within the project to agree on something, it's also about having a track record of what was discussed and what the decision or which decisions have been made. For new people who join, who can look at the archive of the mailing list and figure out what happened, but it's also about the oversight from the foundation members, from the board members who can look at the archive and can look at the mailing list to see what has happened or what is happening.
Yeah, so I think there's also like a piece of history. So in the early days of Apache, a lot of the early Apache members were also members of the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, the people who sort of like write the standards for most internet technologies. And in the IETF, we learned a very, very hard lesson in the early days of the internet, and that is that making decisions at meetings, especially making decisions at meetings in America, wasn't quite ideal. And it wasn't quite ideal for two reasons. One was a bit of an old reason that sort of like had everything to do with the fact that cryptography at that time was a bit of a sensitive issue and non-Americans couldn't always sort of like travel or discuss it easily. But the other reason sort of like was quite simply because of language barriers, cultural barriers. It was found that mailing lists or groups in the IETF which made standards where substantial discussions sort of like happened on the list or where decisions were made on the list, even though they were sort of like discussed at face-to-face meetings, because the IETF actually meets three, four times a year, at that time sometimes even six times a year. Where basically when the decisions sort of like were, when things were discussed at the mailing list, at face-to-face, but then no decision was made, but decision was made weeks or months later on the mailing list, it was found that a lot of people would improve the decisions in the weeks which followed the face-to-face meetings. So it was actually found that because of language barriers, because of cultural differences and so on, actually the quality of the technical documents went way up if you sort of like made sure that sort of like was a mailing list discussion. So that was actually one of the things we sort of like took to heart in the early days of Apache. Also, like keep in mind, in the early days of Apache, there wasn't much money or anything else involved, so traveling to the US wasn't something easy. So actually a lot of those meetings couldn't happen face-to-face at all. In fact, most of the Apache folks didn't sort of like meet for the first 4 or 5 years, and in fact some of the key players in the Apache web server and SSL only met sort of like after about 6 or 7 years for the very first time face-to-face. So there's also kind of like another value there, and that's basically making sure that, and it's not so much about like an all-inclusive community, at least not back then, but it's basically about honoring the fact that there are sort of like language issues, and sort of like if you express things in emails and in text, it basically allows for a lot more discussion and higher quality sort of like to be gathered across the globe.
I would say about the mailing list, it enables two things that we absolutely want for the foundation. One is being a neutral space, so it means that everybody can, and that's what Dirk was saying, everybody can you know, bring their voice to the discussion. It should be possible. If it happens in a room and you're not there, it's over. And the other thing is the asynchronous collaboration, that you don't necessarily have to be at a meeting at a specific time for to make a decision.
It's about the time zones. Basically.
Yeah, time zones and people's zones. If you like to work early or late, it shouldn't be a problem. You should be able to contribute. And this is the asynchronous thing. And when we speak of mailing lists, a common topic today is why aren't we using Slack or other types of communications? I'm preparing a blog post on that. I've been trying to think about, because Slack is not working for me, for this type of collaboration that Dirk explains. Mailing lists are old and clunky, but we haven't found a better way so far. And I've been thinking about that, and I think there are some aspects of the mailing list which are required. And we don't have that in the newer tools so far, unfortunately.
So I think another just sort of like just a bit of, so if you think of like Jakarta, we talked about it earlier, or some of the XML projects. I mean, it's just if you sort of like go back to this time, or even sort of like in Apache, some of the most important key bits in the software, they were actually written by students at that time who absolutely had not a penny for basically traveling, and in fact, some of them even were a little bit limited because they had to travel to the University of Milano to sort of like send out their email. So I think it's also kind of like that very low barrier, I think, which is a very pleasant thing to include. To come back to the mailing list discussion structure, if you search basically for Professor Crowston, there was a really interesting piece where he compares people like mailing lists where a lot of top posting is being done versus mailing lists where a lot of quoted posting is being done. And what he looks at specifically in code is how many things get dropped to the floor. So how often it happens that a discussion sort of like drops something on the floor. And it's very interesting to see that sort of like the Apache mailing list at sort of like in the 2005, 2008 period, the community as a whole drops a lot less on the floor because of the way they use those mailing lists. And given the fact that we're much in infrastructure space, apparently that's a good thing. At least that's his argument.
Another related query from people was, what's so magic about 72 hours?
I think it's a bit what Bertrand already mentioned about the asynchronous bit of the mailing lists. You don't have to be in the same time zone. You don't have to be awake at whatever point in time things get discussed. I mean, discussions on the mailing list are typically quite spiky in the sense there's some discussion within like 1 or 2 hours about the same topic, and then it dies off a little bit. Especially when it comes to decisions, you want to give people a chance to contribute to that discussion, to veto that decision if someone has any reason to. And I think the 72 hours is basically if someone is away for the weekend, more or less, that kind of works reasonably well. You can come back and say, okay, sorry, I didn't have a chance to talk about this 2 days ago, but I have a reason, or here's some comments and feedback why I think this is a bad idea, or why we should change this in a certain way. I don't know if there's another reason why the 72s came apart. I think it's just that.
I actually wanted to add a little bit to 72 hours. You know, whenever people complain about it, it's mostly because, you know, they want things to happen quicker, which is understandable. And the bit here to realize is that in Apache, there are only very few things that really do require a formal vote. As in, unless you do a formal vote, you actually didn't do the right thing. In fact, there are only two things in Apache, to my knowledge, at least at the level of the projects, that are required to have a formal vote. One is whenever you do a release and you want to, you know, push the next version of the software out, you actually have to vote on it, and you have to get at least three binding PMC votes, and that voting period has to happen within 72 hours. And the second one is when you change the composition of the PMC, when you add new people or remove people, right? And if you think about it, both of these are actually kind of important, right? So 72 hours is sort of a minimum period where everybody can actually have time to actually even think about it, let alone have time to participate. Now, everything else doesn't really require a vote. And that gets confused in Apache a lot of times. I mean, it's fine if you run a vote and you allow it to run for 72 hours. I mean, that's totally cool. But a lot of times people think that everything is requiring a vote, and that's just not true. So, for example, you can actually add committers just based on consensus. If everybody feels that, somebody deserves to be a committer, unlike PMC member, that is actually a recognizable entity of the legal structure of the foundation. With PMCs, you can just add whoever you want, right? You don't have to wait for 72 hours. Heck, you don't even have to run a vote. I mean, if you feel like everybody in the community is agreeing already, you can exercise, this sort of lazy consensus thing where, you make a decision and sort of you run with it. And if it is a decision that's easily reversible, so much the better. So whenever it comes to code, that 72 hours window doesn't really apply most of the time at all. So to me, again, the important things are protected by 72 hours, and there are only two important things at the level of the project, and everything else you can do as quickly as you want.
And even for voting on releases, the 72 hours is not a hard requirement of the foundation. It's a strong recommendation. In Sling, for example, we have 150 modules, and one of them is the parent POM. And when you release that, it's really trivial and it's bothering. Mm-hmm. So the PMC has agreed that for parent POM releases, you can do a quick vote, 24 hours, mm-hmm. and that's fine. I mean, if a project would do all its releases with quick votes, that would probably not fly. But if you have a good reason to bypass this, it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, I think another thing which we once or twice a year, I think, sort of like make an exception for is basically when it's a security issue. It happens quite, I think, at least once a year, sometimes a bit more often, that basically a PMC sort of like reports or the security team says like to the PMC, hey, sort of like just do the release right now, right away with this just this patch in there because it's important. And that's good oversight as well. I think the other thing to add is there are quite a few anthropologists who study the Apache Software Foundation, and it's interesting to see that sort of like a lot of the more interesting social interactions around like patches and things like that don't sort of like flare up straight after like someone does a proposal, but actually it seems that sort of like people just sort of like do need 48 hours or periods like that to actually think about things, gather their thoughts, and actually sort of like start a long discussion. So if you look sort of like at some of the larger changes being made to Apache, quite often you sort of like, if you look through the mailing histories, you see that actually it does take a few days for those things to happen.
I think one other reason for the, let's say, slow pace, the 72 hours, is also that, well, in the beginning, people, it wasn't their main job to release the Apache web server. They had day jobs. Nowadays, things are a bit different. Of course, there's still volunteers, there's students who do stuff. But there's a large number of people who get paid by their company to work on Apache projects. For them, obviously, they want to make quicker decisions. They've been like, I've been looking at this for like the last 3 days. And because it's my job, mm-hmm. But people who basically have another day job, they need the evening or the weekend or basically need a few days to actually think about this topic. So that's quite important.
Yep. Actually, so like as a historic thing, we actually did use exactly that in the period of XML and the early Jakarta Java days to actually keep some of the very big companies in checks. So actually we had quite a few large companies, which shall remain nameless, who really want to have releases out there, especially because it was tied to the bonuses of managers and personal bonuses and four things through. And we quite regularly sort of like use this sort of like 72 hours or even something a little bit longer to sort of like make sure that actually companies couldn't simply grab control by throwing lots of people and lots of resources at things, and actually make sure that lone student somewhere in Milano or wherever that person was actually would be able to sort of like make a very good compelling technical argument to sort of like offset the sort of like commercial things.
Another query you've had from some early podlings was, why do people keep banging on about getting other contributors in? We all created this code, it works awesomely, we've released it, we've sold it. Why do you keep saying I now have to get other people in? Why can't I just carry on as we do now?
I assume the question is mainly in relation to having only or too many people from the same company on one project. I think it's all about diversity. We care very, very much about diversity in all its various forms. Diversity in terms of where people are from, if they are male, female, and obviously also which company they work for. We sometimes have software donated to the ASF or to the incubator from a company. And that often comes with many people from that company working on that project because in many cases they want to continue maintaining it but want to do this under the umbrella of the ASF, which is good. However, we want to make sure that a project is sustainable even after that company has changed their focus. A commercial company can change their focus in some cases fairly quickly for whatever reason. They decide this is no longer our focus, or they go out of business, or they get bought by a parent company who has a different idea of what is important and what should be or what money and budget should be spent on. So if suddenly all developers go away, what's left? If you don't have any other contributors who work on that project, the project will die. So I think it's one of the main requirements of the incubator before a project can actually come out of the incubator to actually have that a certain level of diversity in that project.
Being in the incubator, I have a lot to say on the topic. I think we basically need to talk about two separate issues. First one is how viable the project will be, you know, in the long run. And second of all, you know, who basically maintains controls over the project. And these two issues are related, but they're not the same. So the viability question goes back to your point. It's like, you know, suppose a company pulls back, you know, what happens to a project, right? And, you know, the most unfortunate situation is the project dies. But actually, I think that's not the biggest problem. Because if company pulls back and the project dies, I mean, we at ASF are not shy about moving projects into the attic. Like, that's just normal life cycle of a project. And if all of a sudden the company pulls back, that's actually why a little tangent. Like, everybody goes on about Cassandra and DataStax and whatnot, and they just don't get it. Like, DataStax is a company, they made a decision. That decision may affect, you know, time commitment of the contributors who are on the payroll of the DataStax, and they may not contribute to the project. That's just fine. They're on a payroll of a company, and they will contribute to something else or nothing at all. They will be just contributing to a closed source bit of software. That is just fine. And if the project has enough people to continue, it will continue. And if it doesn't, it won't. Simple as that. Now, again, if all of the projects coming out of incubator will die, you know, quickly, that's just not good because it creates a lot of busy work for the board. But chances are they won't. So again, that issue I actually don't see as the biggest sort of problem. The biggest problem that I see is if a project is actually very viable, but essentially is controlled by a single entity to the commercial benefit of that entity. That is the biggest problem that I see. And in a way, it's actually much easier to recognize the project that is failing. It's like nobody on the PMC left. You know, pretty easy to recognize by the board and move it to the attic. But when the project appears to be all functioning normally, putting the releases out, you know, doing all the right things, but in fact the governance structure is such that it's sort of crooked from within, it's actually much more difficult to recognize. And I think, you know, that's where the biggest diversity requirement comes in. And I see that being addressed in two ways. So my personal solution is basically twofold. First of all, if you have, I feel, at least that's my feeling, if you have enough Apache Software Foundation members on the PMC, chances are that at least if they see something going screwy, they will report back to the board. So that's one. And second of all, of course, you know, if you have additional members on the PMC from other companies, you know, from other backgrounds, from outside of the sort of monoculture that created the project, again, if the project gets under the control of a single entity, and it doesn't even have to be a company, it may be just a cabal of people, right? You know, sort of this conspiracy of people who want the project to do or not do certain things. So if you can break that, the easiest way is to just add people from other backgrounds and, you know, other sort of companies, other cultures. But to me, this is the fundamental problem that needs to be addressed. You know, who sort of controls the project? Whether the project is viable or not is less of a problem for me.
Yeah, I think there's also like another aspect to it. So if you by sort of like making sure they're external, like there are new contributors, other contributors, you do two things. You sort of like ensure that you kind of like have a good litmus test whether the software is effective, because if you don't can't get contributors, clearly it isn't doing something all too well. You sort of like get requirements which come from totally new industries, from new people, so sort of like you get realistic requirements being applied continuously. But at the same time, you also introduce, which I sometimes sort of like, well, like a little bit of stroppiness in the system. You sort of like introduce sort of like lots of different opinions, people who want the project to go in a slightly different direction or that direction and so on, which sort of like over time in quite a few projects sort of like tends to sort of like, I wouldn't want to say slow the project down, but sort of like forces the project a little bit to focus on the thing which everyone finds important. Now, there is a fine balance between the lowest common denominator and sort of like, which is, of course, not what you want to do, and sort of like something just above it. But it certainly sort of like, stops things running a little bit out of control. And it's sort of like, at least sort of like when I was sort of like sitting on the board, it was one of the most useful indicators to figure out whether a project was like too much influenced by one company or by a set of companies, by basically checking whether sort of like proposals sort of like made it through and whether other proposals kind of like were sort of like dampened a little bit. So I think sort of like you could sort of like see it as a damper in the springiness of the thing. So have those new contributors there, sure. And that also applies to sort of like new young contributors like which are sort of like very fresh to the project and are more likely to have their own ideas and steer things up.
I think the incubator is basically the main part where we can exercise that. I wouldn't say force, but basically try to create that diversity. Because once a project has become a top-level project, once it's outside the incubator, they're no longer mentors really, really there. I mean, they may continue being involved in the project, but at that point it becomes much more difficult to figure out, okay, do we have still that level of diversity? Is the diversity decreasing, or is there a problem, which is what you basically pointed out. So the incubator serves that reasonably well, but yeah, there's no ultimate way to really prevent this from happening. To some extent, it's okay if the project is working fine and if proposals from other members who are not working for that particular company or something, actually, if these proposals are being looked at and taken care of, that's perfectly fine. But what we mainly want to avoid is that a company sees the ASF as a way to dump their open source project, or not really dump it, but to basically put it and use the ASF as a means to gain exposure to their project, but try to continue running it under the same governance model they have, which is typically a commercial based governance model. And the incubator helps to resolve that. So that's typically the people who complain about, why do we have to bring things back to the mailing list? Why do I have this? Because they have their meetings at the company office, talk about things, which is fine. They contribute to the software, but that's not what the Apache way is.
I think it's also fair to say that we're actually in the incubator a little bit more strict than we are once a project graduates, because once a project has graduated, they can't get away with murder, but actually we really trust the community a lot at that point. So if they go into very strange ways, and we've had some projects going in very strange ways, we simply say, like, well, if that's what the community wants, I mean, as long as the liability things and individual developers are protected, and yeah, then basically we give them a lot of leeway.
Just a short comment on projects disappearing, going to the attic. I think the ASF is not here to save projects. We are here to provide a space for communities to save projects. So if you have a project that and the dominant organization pulls away, then if people from the community show up and save the project, it's great, and it's our role to provide this space where this can happen. If nobody shows up, then the project moves to the attic, and that's not dramatic. Mm-hmm. It's maybe just finished or not interesting anymore.
We have a big attic.
We have actually 41 projects in the attic.
Wow.
I did check the other day. Actually, a question. I'm not that much involved with the incubator recently. Are there actually any cases where a project... I mean, we have cases where a project didn't make it through the incubator. That's fine. The project basically died. Many reasons, sometimes because simply technology wasn't necessary anymore at that point in time. Things change. But do we have any cases where a company realized, the Apache way isn't really what I want to do, and actually took this back? I don't know. Do you have any
examples? I forgot the names, and maybe it's better not to say the names.
Maybe it's better not to remember.
But that there's at least one project where a company brought the project to the incubator and tried it, and after a few months, they realized, no, that's not the model that we want to use, so we'll go away. And that was fine. I mean, it's better to fail early and recognize that. The Apache model is not for every project. Some projects are perfectly fine on GitHub, others in Eclipse or wherever. The Apache is one model. We think it's the best, but it's not necessarily.
I think it's a good example where I think that company, I don't know the example, but maybe that's a case where a company misunderstood what the ASF is and wanted to use that for their own purpose and realized that's not really working out for us. So that's a reason why we have these rules and these discussions and why we have the Apache way.
You could blame us for that because the incubator documentation is pretty terrible. So it's not hard to imagine that the company would misunderstood exactly what it is. So it's our job to make that better.
Okay, another query we often get from new projects is, why do you guys keep beating me up about license headers and notice files? Those nice folks at GitHub have never had a go at me about that.
So I think the easy answer to that is basically it's our job to protect the community. And protect the community basically means that we have to protect each and every individual developer, every person involved. And that basically means having your license, your paperwork absolutely in order. So that whenever an issue appears, the Apache Software Foundation is able to basically not just assist the developer, but actually sort of like insist that whoever has beef with a developer actually has to sort of like sort it out with the Apache Software Foundation first. And of course, when the Apache Software Foundation loses, then they may go after all sorts of other people. But basically, it's about actually having an umbrella over all things. And the reason why you want to have that in absolutely every file, why you want to have things as spotless as possible, is because every little bug you leave, every little tiny omission you leave, makes the process of defending things more expensive. Gives basically people like a foothold to attack, and basically simply not having that means that most people look at us and go like, well, actually, let's not have an argument there. Having said that, I mean, we regularly get all sorts of little sort of like little pings and things. I mean, in most cases, actually, the most common complaint we get is people who say like, oh, you've stolen my company's code, which actually usually is the case that someone imported Apache code into a company's repository, stripped off the licenses, and then they think it's their code. So it's usually the other way around. But that's kind of like really why you want to have those headers and everything to like as perfect as possible.
So I actually have two comments. Maybe I'm getting older, but the amount of interesting creative ways of how developers use code these days is just mind-boggling to me. So I think, you know, what's happening is I still remember the time when like GPL was like a big new thing that we used to fight demand with, right? Now that's just like not an issue. So now I think most developers view source code as communal property, right? It's like bikes in Amsterdam, right? You know, you can just take a bike off the street and drive a little bit, you know, drop it, you know, take another one, you know, it's a communal property, right? You know, so I had a guy who basically was, you know, part of the project that went into the incubator, and we did a little bit of scanning, and we discovered that, you know, the guy imported a GPL library into the project, and we go back to the guy, and we're like, what did you do? And he's like, well, I changed the name, so I can now license it under the Apache license, right? So it just goes to show that, you know, there's a lot of education that needs to be done. So when we beat projects about, you know, things like header files, it's not that we, you know, just need said script to basically put a certain text on top of every file. We actually want you to go and look at the source code, right? Or at least, you know, have some idea of where that source code came from. So that's one. The other one is, you know, notices file is actually all about, again, sort of, at Apache, we're trying to be nice people. And, you know, notices file is about recognizing somebody else's work, right? And you want to do that, right? Again, like going back to this point of source code being communal property, it's all nice, but it's also nice when you recognize somebody else's good job or just job to begin with, right? You know, it's nice when you give credit where credit is due. And it's not, again, like, yes, we can sort of justify and, you know, that's a lot of the reasoning behind why we beat Podlinks up on that, you know, because of the legal reasons. But I think fundamentally it's all about, you know, Apache basically just being a place for nice people, right? You know, we're trying to do good by others, you know, whenever we can. And that actually has nothing to do with legal.
Okay. Another query that often comes up around the same time is, why do you keep banging on about these contributor license agreements, and why do they matter? And anyway, GitHub doesn't bother me about them.
Right. So I think it's kind of like it's sort of like a repeat of the same thing. So in Apache, we try to make sure that. So the easiest way to keep things clean, to sort of like make sure that you have the right and title to what you're distributing and releasing, is by making sure that everything you have in your repository is clean to start with. So that basically means that we're carefully policing the sort of like ingress to our repository, because we know that when sort of like things can only go into the repository when there's either a contributor license agreement or a so-called software grant, like a bulk grant. And in both cases, we've sort of like vetted that. Then we know that everything in the repository is clean, which means that if you build a release and you only use things from the repository, we sort of like oversight gets so much easier, because basically half your job is already done. So that's kind of like why we're so careful about that early police, that sort of like that early stage policing. And the other thing is sort of like a very practical thing is, if you are sort of like slightly messy there and things sort of like do end up in lawsuits and things like that, there's something called legal discovery, sort of like which we happens quite a bit, where basically the ASF is like asked to overturn our records and things to be used in lawsuits, usually not against us, but usually, for example, against the various big players. And in those cases, if things are squeakily clean, it's extremely easy for us to sort of like hand things over extremely cheaply. We don't have like large lawyer bills to do that, and that's sort of like basically, yeah, keeping your house hygienic simply makes things cheaper.
But it also has a little bit to do with the governance, because, you know, ASF is not just the place to develop your code base. I mean, GitHub is fine for that. We're more a place where the community can have a reasonable governance model, right? You know, and the code base then, again, needs to belong to the community as opposed to a set of individuals. So if you operate without the CLAs, without the ICLAs, then the code base basically belongs to a bunch of individuals. And again, maybe I've been in the software industry for too long, but recently I had a case where a project had to be relicensed. And, you know, as we all know, in order to do that, unless you have CLAs on file, you actually have to contact, you know, all the original authors. And unfortunately, it turned out that two of them were dead. So the project basically got stuck. Like, there's absolutely no way to do anything with that project at this point, unless somebody takes effort to rewrite pretty non-trivial pieces of code, you know, from a clean room implementation standpoint. So what we ended up having is a very useful project that was basically stuck in limbo. And it's really not a nice situation.
So the two horrible cases are basically when someone has died or when basically has been an incredibly messy divorce and you sort of like end up actually having to negotiate with the family or the former husband or something like that, and that gets quite hairy.
Okay, we've only got a few minutes left before we get kicked out of the room, so I'd like to open it up to some questions. If anyone's got any queries for the panel, any burning issues about the foundation that didn't get answered, okay, I'll run up with this one so that they can keep that one.
Hi, my name is Benedict. I'd like to talk about release signing, because at the Apache Commons project, it's kind of a mess, the release process, because there are so many manual steps. And at our company, we obviously do releases via build server, but what I have learned is that that's not possible, because we would have to put the signing keys on the build server for the ASF, and that would be the prime target for attacks. Is that correct? Is that the reason why we can't do automated release builds?
I think, in all fairness, the reason is that we, as a tech community, haven't really figured out how to do this,
okay.
Right? So your first order solution is like, as you say, is absolutely right, like just put the private key on some build server and do it that way. And obviously you said like, oh, well, yeah, but then we suddenly have like a prime focus for attack, right? And that's actually a pretty realistic one, and so on and so on. So then also all the things have to be secured, and things get hairier, and it's sort of like downhill. So I think the same thing sort of like applies if you sort of like have things being signed by a third party for you. If you, for example, use the services of a third party company to, for example, sign the releases of OpenOffice, how do we make sure that actually
what that company sends back signed is actually a thing we as an organization under our governance wanted to go out. What happens if that other party is compelled to do something a little bit naughty and so on, because ultimately it's the ASF holding the can and we're not just an American organization, we kind of like want to do these things globally. So I think my personal take on this is that as a tech community as a whole, we need to figure out how we actually do that type of release signing without falling back to these very primitive single key, single location, all your marbles in one place. So I think that if we sort of like spend enough time and bang our head against this problem, that we'll end up with a situation where, for example, your plus ones on mailing lists can be signed, or your sort of like multiple people can sort of like somehow contribute together to sort of like make those releases go through and actually have a proper signature to those. But I think we're as a software industry as a whole, we haven't figured that one out, and you only have to look like one peak sort of like a certificate pinning at the various app stores to see what an incredible mess it is. So I think basically we have a technical solution, but it doesn't fit the community. And
but you think it's possible to find a technical solution? It's not.
I think definitely. But I mean, Doug, in the ASF, some people who are pretty good at these type of crypto things have banged their head against it and haven't yet cracked it. Okay. I mean, we've had several goes at that, and yeah.
Well, Lars can probably tell more.
I was just saying that's the difference between the Apache Software Foundation being a non-profit organization, having this Apache way model. There's no leadership roles in the sense where the VP of a project can say, but this is what I want. I want automated builds. That's something that happens in a commercial environment, where you simply then say, well, we don't have any other option. We need to put all the private keys on that server. And because I'm the boss, I'm going to require you to actually do that, even if the tech guys say, but this is insecure. I mean, I work as a security architect, typically for companies as a contractor, and that's simply what happens. It's sometimes even against policy in that company, but then you raise an exception for that, and someone says, well, we don't have any other options, or we just do that. But that's not what we want to do in the Apache Software Foundation. Someone with a crypto security background will say, hang on, this is really a stupid idea. We need to do this in a better way. But yeah, I think we need to maybe spend more time on making that work.
One thing I'd say is go find the infra people. They're normally on a table hiding a little bit. You can automate quite a lot, and they can give you some advice on whether you're automating enough.
That was my comment.
Thank you.
How are we doing on time? Are we out? Okay, so I'll just skip the slides forward. A couple of resources. Apache Community Development Project. Everyone heard of it? Anyone been to the website? A few nods. Have a look. There's quite a lot of information there. If you've got any queries about how Apache should work, you need signposting, stuff like that, the Devitt community list is a very friendly, welcoming place. May not be able to give you the answer, but probably can tell you the other group to go and bug. And then the Apache Incubator. Lots of information on the website. Some of it you can even find. General Incubator can be a bit noisy, but there's a huge amount of resources and knowledge there. And if you can't really find an answer about something in the incubator, ask there and it'll give us a prod to fix that bit of the website. Okay, so big thank you to all of our panel.